Welcome to the Deep Dive, where your shortcut to getting informed, cutting through the noise to get to the really fascinating stuff from new research. Okay, before we dive in today, just a very quick but really, really crucial note. This deep dive, it's purely for informational purposes. It's absolutely not intended to diagnose, treat, or prevent any kind of medical condition. And we also need to be super clear. Oxytocin itself isn't approved for consumer use. Any compounds we might touch on are strictly for laboratory research use, as defined by the relevant laws. Now, at Lunea, that's L-U-N-E-A, pronounced Lunida, we're, you know, deeply committed to transparency and to education and supporting ethically sound research in this whole area. We really believe in sharing peer-reviewed objective findings, the kind that genuinely contribute to the evolving science of intimacy and well-being. Okay, so with that important groundwork laid, let's get to today's mission. We're unpacking the science behind this really fascinating molecule. You've probably heard it called the love hormone, right? Oxytocin. Specifically, we're digging into its complex role. And yeah, it's often misunderstood in human sexual wellness. Our main guides today are a big peer-reviewed reviews published in Current Sexual Health Reports by Allie and Diamond back in 2020. And we're also pulling some key insights from a blog post that kind of synthesizes their findings. Basically, we want to cut through the pop science claims and see what the actual research is telling us.
Yeah, and it's so important to understand what oxytocin actually is beyond just that catchy name. It's a neuropeptide. So think of it like a chemical messenger in your brain. It's traditionally known for its big roles in things like childbirth and mother-infant bonding, that kind of social connection. But, you know, as research has grown, we're seeing it pop up in studies looking at sexual context much more broadly, everything from, you know, arousal to orgasm itself, and even what happens after orgasm, that whole experience. And the review we're focusing on, its main goal was really to clarify how oxytocin interacts with all these different sexual processes, and crucially, to try and separate correlation from causation. You know, does it actually make these things happen, or does it just show up because they're happening? That's the big question here.
That question, cause or effect, that's huge, isn't it? Because it leads right into something that I think feels pretty intuitive for a lot of people. The review kicks off with a really fundamental point. Our bodies naturally make more oxytocin during sexual activity. This isn't just theory. It's something scientists have actually measured.
Exactly. This isn't guesswork. We're talking measurable changes in the body. Multiple studies, pretty consistently, show that oxytocin levels, whether you measure it in blood or even saliva, they reliably go up during sexual arousal. And then they typically peak shortly after orgasm.
And that's for everyone. Men and women.
Yep. That's a key finding. It's observed in both men and women. Now, what is interesting is that the exact pattern, like how much it increases and when, can vary quite a bit. It can depend on things like, you know, the type of stimulation involved. And even individual differences matter. For instance, some studies suggest women who don't typically have difficulty with orgasm show maybe stronger increases compared to women who do report difficulties.
Okay, so there are nuances there.
Definitely. And this isn't brand new stuff either. You can go back quite a way. Carmichael and colleagues, way back in 87, they were already seeing oxytocin increases during masturbation and orgasm. And then later, Blacher's team in 99, they noted these significant jumps in women's plasma oxytocin that's in the blood just 1 minute and 5 minutes after orgasm. What's also kind of cool is that even something less direct, like listening to erotic stories, can trigger a rise in salivary oxytocin in women.
Wow, really?
Just listening.
Yeah. So the body's response system involving oxytocin is clearly engaged during these experiences. But like the review points out, this consistent natural rise really forces that key question back to the forefront. Is the oxytocin helping the sexual behavior happen, or is it just, you know, a consequence of it happening? Right. That distinction is critical because, like you said, the intuitive jump is, okay, natural levels go up, so if I just add more oxytocin, maybe through a spray or something, that should boost desire, right? Kickstart arousal. Yeah. But this is where it gets really, really interesting. Because the research, when you look at administered oxytocin for arousal, it tells a surprisingly different story.
That's absolutely spot on. This is where that popular idea of oxytocin as some kind of simple love potion really starts to unravel when you look at the data. So researchers tried to test this directly. They gave people intranasal oxytocin. That's usually a spray up the nose designed to get it into the brain more effectively.
Right, bypassing some of the body's breakdown.
Exactly. And when they did these studies comparing it to a placebo,
yeah,
the results were pretty consistent. They generally did not find that administered oxytocin reliably increased sexual desire or feelings of arousal or even the body's physical responses.
Huh. So it didn't really move the needle on arousal.
Largely, no, not consistently. This was seen in studies on men, like one from 2008 looking at responses to erotic films. Oxytocin didn't significantly change things compared to placebo, and it wasn't just men. More recent work, like from Kruger's group in 2018, found the same lack of effect on women's sexual arousal or orgasm, or even things like vaginal blood flow, which is an objective physical measure.
Even in like real life situations, not just labs.
Yeah, that's important too. Studies looking at partnered sex at home, like one by Benia and colleagues in 2014, also found that intranasal oxytocin didn't significantly impact arousal or lubrication in women or erection in men. There was even research looking specifically at women with sexual dysfunction over an 8-week period, and the oxytocin didn't improve arousal or function compared to placebo.
Wow. Okay, so the evidence against it being a direct arousal booster seems pretty strong then.
It doesn't really support that direct pausal role, no. No, it's not totally uninvolved. There's some thinking that maybe oxytocin receptors on the genitals themselves might play a role in sort of preparing the body.
Like helping with lubrication or erection readiness?
Potentially, yeah. Helping the plumbing work, so to speak. But the key thing from the administered studies is that giving extra oxytocin doesn't seem to actually increase the overall feeling of arousal or desire itself. It's a really crucial difference.
That really does challenge the whole love hormone label, doesn't it?
Yeah.
At least for that initial spark.
Yeah.
So if it's not reliably boosting arousal, what is it doing? Because like you said, it is present. Levels do go up naturally. Where does it actually seem to make a difference in the sexual experience?
Exactly. That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And
yeah.
The answer seems to be, well, it's more nuanced. It's not about starting the engine, perhaps, but maybe more about the quality of the ride and the destination. There's some emerging evidence pointing towards a role in orgasm intensity, but again, it's complicated.
No, so.
Well, for example, that 2018 study by Kruger's team, they did find that women reported increased orgasm intensity after getting intranasal oxytocin. But this effect was particularly noticeable during solitary sexual activity, masturbation.
Okay, interesting. Only when alone.
In that study, yeah. But then, contrast that with the Bania study from 2014, they found a similar effect, increased orgasm intensity, but only in men and only during partnered sex.
Huh. So it's different for men and women and depends if they're alone or with someone.
It certainly looks that way based on these studies. It really underscores how complex this is. Context matters. Gender seems to matter. It's not a one-size-fits-all effect. And it's not just about administered oxytocin either. Remember how we talked about natural levels?
Yeah, they go up naturally.
Right. And there's research going back to Carmichael in 94 suggesting a correlation between the amount of oxytocin naturally released and how intense women rated their orgasms. And even more telling, maybe, is work by Caruso and others in 2018. They found that women who reported difficulties achieving orgasm tended to have lower baseline oxytocin levels before sex.
Lower to start with.
Yeah, and also showed less of an increase after orgasm compared to women without those difficulties. So it hints at this more intricate link between your natural oxytocin system and the quality of the orgasmic experience.
Okay, so maybe a role in orgasm intensity, but it's complex. What about after? You mentioned post-orgasm effects earlier.
Yes, and this is where oxytocin's role seems maybe a bit clearer and more aligned with its known functions in bonding. For men, studies like Bania's found that administered oxytocin was linked to greater feelings of sexual satiety. You know, feeling satisfied, complete, maybe less interested in immediate further stimulation after partnered sex.
Kind of like, okay, done for now, feeling good.
Pretty much, yeah. And for women, in the Kruger study, intranasal oxytocin was associated with feeling less tension and, importantly, greater feelings of emotional closeness after orgasm during solitary activity.
Ah, the closeness factor. That connects to the bonding idea, right?
Exactly. It fits really well with what we already know about oxytocin promoting social bonding, attachment, feelings of connection, trust. So the idea is that the natural peak of oxytocin after orgasm might play a really crucial role in strengthening that feeling of intimacy and connection between partners, that post-coital glow and bonding time.
Makes sense. It's not just the physical act, but the connection afterwards.
Precisely. And it's not just humans. There was a fascinating study on bonobos, our close primate relatives, by Moscovice and team in 2019. They found higher oxytocin levels after female-female sexual interactions, and this was linked to them staying physically closer afterwards. It hints at this deep, possibly evolutionary role for oxytocin in promoting social closeness after sexual activity.
Wow. Okay, so summing this up, context is huge. Individual differences, definitely. Gender seems to play a really significant role in how oxytocin acts, or at least how it's experienced. So when we pull all this together from the review, what's the big picture? What should we take away about oxytocin and sex?
Well, I think the main takeaway is that oxytocin is clearly involved. It's active during sex, but its exact job description, still a bit fuzzy and definitely more complex than just the love hormone implies. It doesn't seem to be the main driver of initial desire or arousal based on the administered studies. That's a key point.
Right, not the ignition switch.
Exactly. Instead, the evidence sort of points towards it being more of a maybe a supporting player. Or perhaps an enhancer of the quality of the experience, and particularly important for what happens afterwards, the satisfaction, the satiety, and especially that crucial bonding and feeling of closeness.
And those gender differences you mentioned seem really key, too.
They do. You know, some researchers, like Hiller back in 2005, suggested oxytocin might be particularly important for women's psychological arousal, that feeling of connection and emotional readiness. Maybe more so than purely physical responses. And you see hints of this in animal studies, too, where oxytocin influences things like sexual receptivity and bonding through touch. It's easy to see how that could translate to humans' physical closeness during and after sex releases oxytocin, which then deepens the emotional bond.
So there's still a lot to learn, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely. The review definitely highlights the need for more research. Especially comparative studies. We need to look at different types of relationships long-term versus new couples, same-sex versus other sex partners, and different contexts, too. Like, how do the effects seen in masturbation studies compare to partnered sex studies? There are still lots of questions.
So, no miracle cure for sexual issues using oxytocin just yet?
Definitely not based on this current evidence. And it's so important to circle back to that disclaimer. This is all informational. Oxytocin isn't approved for consumer use for these purposes. But, you know, understanding its role, even if complex, is still really valuable. It's part of the bigger puzzle of our neurochemistry, our emotions, and our intimate lives. It holds potential for future understanding, even if it's not a simple fix. It's about the whole symphony, not just one instrument.
That's a great way to put it. Okay, so recapping this deep dive, oxytocin levels do naturally rise during sexual activity. That seems clear. But getting extra oxytocin doesn't reliably boost initial arousal or desire. That's a major finding challenging popular ideas. Instead, it seems potentially more involved in orgasm intensity, though that's complex and varies, and definitely plays a role in those post-orgasm feelings of satisfaction, satiety, and crucially, emotional bonding. And context, gender, individual biology, It all matters hugely. It's definitely not a simple story. What really stands out to you as you think about all this research, it's clear the science is still unfolding, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, maybe it prompts a really important question for all of us, you know? Instead of searching for one single love hormone or a magic bullet to fix or enhance intimacy, perhaps the deeper understanding, the real insight, lies in appreciating the incredible interplay. How our complex neurochemistry, our unique personal histories and experiences, and even our social and cultural contexts all weave together to shape these incredibly profound, intimate connections. So the question becomes, what does this more complex, interconnected view mean for how you think about the biological roots of your own desire, your connections, your relationships?
That is a fantastic thought to leave everyone with. Thank you so much for joining us on this really fascinating exploration of oxytocin. We hope it's given you some new things to think about, maybe sparks more curiosity about just how intricate our bodies and minds really are when it comes to intimacy. Till next time, keep diving deep.